Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
You've got to go on, you've got to give and give and give. They've got to like you, got to. Do you understand? You can't fall down. You can't, because your future's in it, my future, and everything all of us have is staked on you. All right, now I'm through. But you keep your feet on the ground and your head on those shoulders of yours and go out and soar. You're going out a youngster, but you've got to come back a star.
Life just isn't like that. Except sometimes. For Leonard Bernstein, one day in November 1943, it was a little like that. But instead of 42nd Street, it was 57, Carnegie Hall. It was one of the most famous debut performances in history. He was about to conduct the New York Philharmonic for the first time and to become the first American conductor to achieve international celebrity and to be launched on one of the most illustrious musical careers ever. But let's back up. Bernstein, age 25, was already a musical man about town.
He had boundless energy. He was everywhere.
Gino Francesconi is the archivist and museum director at Carnegie Hall.
Performing piano for ballet classes. He was performing with his friends Adolph Green, Betty Comden down at the Village Vanguard, studying his scores as the assistant conductor of the New York Philharmonic.
And on this particular Saturday in November, he was excited about the premiere that night of his new song cycle, with Jenny Terrell performing. So excited, he'd brought his parents and younger brother to New York from Boston to be there for the occasion. Meanwhile, he'd gotten a call warning him of a possible emergency the next day, involving the guest conductor who was scheduled to lead the Philharmonic Sunday in a concert that was to be broadcast all over the world.
Bruno Walter is sick.
Bernstein's brother, writer Burton Bernstein.
And it's possible, although they never say this definitely with conductors, because conductors have been known to go on and get on the podium in a wheelchair if they have to, or be lifted on crutches. And he said, it's just possible that Bruno Walter won't be able to make it.
Lenny was sworn to secrecy and, feeling a little uneasy, went on with his day.
He went to this concert of Jenny Terrell's. We went, and it was very, very well received. There was a party afterwards, and instead of going home and going to bed or studying the scores, Lenny stayed up very late as usual, but still didn't tell us all.
The next morning about 9 a.m., he got the call. Not only was Bruno Walter too ill to go on, but it was a snowy day, and Artur Rudzinski, the permanent conductor of the Philharmonic, was at home in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. He'd never make it to New York in time. So Bernstein was on in a few hours.
We were supposed to go back, take the train back to Boston, and we got a phone call from Lenny saying, don't go, book the room for another night at least. And guess what? I'm going to conduct the Philharmonic this afternoon. And my parents just couldn't believe it. I mean, it was just like telling him he had landed on Mars. You know, it was just the most unbelievable thing.
Bernstein, in his one good suit, which was on loan from his mentor, Sergei Kuzovitsky, headed for the stage.
Good afternoon. United States Rubber Company again invites you to Carnegie Hall.
While on radio, an announcement was made about the substitution.
Bruno Walter, who was to have conducted this afternoon, is ill, and his place will be taken by the young American-born assistant conductor of the Philharmonic Symphony, Leonard Bernstein.
John Corigliano, who was the concertmaster at the time, you know, put his hand on his shoulder there at the stage door and said, don't worry, you know, we're all behind you.
The coming in, the walking, the taking the bow, turning, facing is.
The late Jacques Margolis was playing in the first violin section that day. He talked about it in an interview some years ago.
You immediately felt something, I mean, just personally, and I even before he lifted his hands to conduct.
Archivist Gino Francesconi.
He remembers saying that I gave the downbeat and they came in like angels. And he doesn't remember anything else after that.
Generally, when they're out there, they sort of, well, Bruno Walter conducts it this way, and if he gets sick, you're supposed to do it sort of his way. But there was no such thing as doing it his way. This was Leonard Bernstein right from the beginning, the way Leonard Bernstein conducted, and at the later years proved, is genius.
So there it was. It was wartime, and the All-American boy was giving the Toscaninis and Stokowskis and all the European-born maestros a run for their money. He conducted his way through the Manfred Overture. He proceeded to the next work on the program, a Miklos Roza piece. At intermission, the broadcast switched to a reading by another American boy genius, Orson Welles, then 28.
Nancy Hale wrote the American scripture I'm going to read you today. It's the story of a young American who gave his life for his country. The boy was only a couple of years out of New Haven when he joined up.
And then on to Lenny conducting Richard Strauss.
It's a very difficult program. As the Daily News said the next day, he said it was like a shoestring catch in center field. They said, make it, and you're a hero. Muff it, and you're a dope. He made it.
The crowd's excitement had been growing with each piece until the audience was in a frenzy at the finale.
Everybody was just raving.
It was a triumph.
And Burton, who was 12 years old at the time, I think, said the roar was like the lion house at the zoo. He said he had never heard anything quite like it.
It was a big crush. People crowded towards the stage, the podium, and Lenny came out.
And he was presented with a telegram that had arrived during the performance from Koussevitzky. Listening now, wonderful, was all it said.
And he was world famous almost immediately. Next day it was front page news in the New York Times and all over the world. It was like a lousy movie.
What was so special about this debut?
I've been asked that question. What do you mean that this is a great conductor and this is a good conductor? And I'm always stumped. I say, I cannot put that into words. It's just somebody comes up there, lifts the baton, you look at him, and suddenly you're playing differently. There becomes an absolute joy in playing for that person.
Lenny's two great mentors were two completely different conductors. Sergei Koussevitzky, who was all intuition and emotion, and Fritz Reiner. Very Germanic, intellectual. Lenny became an amalgam of these two. It is amazing. And it worked in spades. It was just terrific.
And the whole world discovered it all at once on a snowy afternoon in November 70 years ago. No movie could touch it. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.